Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from June 24th, 1996.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be. From the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands in the west, east, across flyover country, all of us, to the Caribbean, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north to the pole, and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM. And a very good morning to you all. I hope you had a good weekend. I'm Art Bell. We've got a lot to talk about, tons and tons of stuff. Whatever you want to dig in on suits me. Well, everybody's talking about Hillary, talking to Eleanor Roosevelt and Mahatma Gandhi. Eleanor, who passed on 34 years ago, Mahatma Gandhi 50 years ago. I wonder if it gets harder as more years pass. Matter of fact, she was even going to talk to Jesus, apparently. That was considered too personal, she said, but Jean Houston could have done it, I guess. She is the foundation of mind research. Now, there is a big brouhaha going on about this. In other words, did she really talk to these individuals, have a conversation with them, or was it all imaginary makeup kind of stuff, which is what the White House says, that they made it up so that she could get in touch with her inner self? Somebody passed on to me a letter they wrote to the editor, Lynn, in Ogden, Utah. Oh, great spirit of Trotsky and world socialism, whose earthly name was Eleanor Roosevelt, hear my plea and let me know your will for me. Is this how the smartest woman in the world, Hillary Clinton, conjures up conversations and visions with a dead political soulmate and fellow socialist? Probably so, but I'm sure I've left out some secret druid incantations and other neat stuff, but this is only one more example of the banana republic-like state of federal government under the Clinton regime. Unfortunately, we are burdened by an administration that sings the praises of voodoo, socialist leaders in Haiti, to communist infant killers in China, so this shouldn't be a surprise. As the story goes, our co-president felt it necessary to make contact with the wife of that great socialist, Franklin, after the Democrat defeat in 94. Depressing, I guess. The secret conspiracy to put health care under state control had failed. Hillary was desperate. Life is not fair. The continuing legacy of the New Deal might become a dead deal without spiritual inspiration from the utopian underworld, where, of course, all the good socialists and communists go. A seance was definitely in order. A New Age spiritual advisor, quickly summoned, break out the bat wing and eye of Newt, no pun intended. We'll probably never know how things turned out. But I'd sort of like to know if old ER showed what she said. Does the Communist Manifesto make sense in another dimension? Hey, that'd be cool stuff. This is reminiscent of a little-known story of a time when Eleanor herself became extremely confused and desperate. Calling upon her own companion and spiritual advisor, she cried out, quote, I'm so upset lately I can't tell if I'm coming or going. Her spiritualist got right to work, and after much incantation and ceremony, eventually called for the First Lady. Get down on your knees, she shouted, now on all four, and crawl straight toward me, and she did. Now turn round and crawl directly away from me, and she did. After several tries and much deliberation, the spirits finally conceded failure and, in frustration, screamed, This beats me. I can't tell if you're coming or going either. I wonder if Eleanor helped Hillary. So, I don't know. Maybe it was just sort of a way of Hillary trying to think, well, now, what would Eleanor have said about this? This defeat. How do we recoup? Or she talked to Eleanor. I'm really not sure. How about you? What dead president? I mean, why go for the First Lady? If you had the opportunity, what dead president would be most valuable, do you think, to talk to? And Indeed, once contact was established, what is it you would say? Who would you want to talk to? What question would you ask of this dead president? So I thought we'd play the dead president's game. And who knows, one of them may come up online and say something back to us. Wouldn't that be something? I mean, who would you go for? Maybe Ike. What is your question? I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. The FBI files, now that is the big story. Meet the Press's Tim Russert asked Representative Klinger, who's doing all this good work, what are the most important questions with regard to the files? One, who requested them? You know, that's amazing, isn't it? That they can't figure out who asked for all these private files? In other words, who authorized it? There's got to be a slip somewhere. I mean, you just don't get FBI files 400-plus by saying, hey, yo, send them over, will you? Designated fall guys, Marsica, I believe his name is. Marsisi, is it? Not sure. Livingstone. Who prepared these files? Nobody admits preparing them. White House said Secret Service did it. Secret Service said, no, we didn't. Do we believe the administration on this? A simple error? Ha, no way. Why did the FBI just, roll over and turn them over? Well, Free said the system depended on honor, obviously casting aspersions on the White House, said that they were rolled over, that the FBI was victimized. Did you know the FBI maintains files on 75 million Americans? Did you know that? How many now in America? 260 million, I think. 75 million of us have files with the FBI? Well, I know I do. Probably a fairly thick one at that. So this is a very, very serious scandal. William Safire said we have on our hands a genuine scandal. A really big story. Watergate size? Maybe. The White House is under assault now, of course, for Whitewater, where there were three criminal referrals last week and an unindicted co-conspirator. Travelgate, which is going to produce later in this week a contempt of Congress a citation if more documents are not produced. Filegate. You know, this big list, the enemies list, did you know that that was among 1,000 files that had been claimed by the president to be his prerogative to keep secret? Did you know that? So they finally caved in and released 1,000. They've still got 2,000 files, and nobody knows exactly what's in them. And they won't give them up. So we are going to have shortly a constitutional crisis on our hands. This is very serious. Finally, I think I would declare this to be very serious. Now, what kind of stuff is in the files? Physical ailments? Your physical, your records, mental troubles, drug and alcohol abuse, extramarital affairs, financial records, IRS stuff. As a matter of fact, there are a number of rumors going around now that White House employees, some of them, bragged to people that we know some very embarrassing things about you but won't tell. Now, there are lots of questions to be asked about this. It is a terrible civil liberties violation. Where's the ACLU? Where's the ACLU on this one, huh? Now, this is normally the kind of thing they'd be all over. What a horrible, horrible personal violation this is. And the ACLU ought to be out there screaming bloody murder. Where is the fury? The White House held on to these files for 2 years. So, I guess my question to you, and the president's poll numbers remain at this moment high, incredibly high, but on this one, this Filegate business, what do you think the voters are going to say? What will their final judgment be, the court of public opinion? Will they say our president is a president, not a pope? What do you expect? Leave the poor guy alone. A simple bureaucratic error here. Or, this is not the stuff of presidents that we want of America. And we should not allow this, and it must be stopped, and he must go. What will the voters say about Filegate? Perhaps without it being a personal intrusion on your privacy, you are not connected to the point that it is a big issue for you. You might, of course, feel very differently if your file were sitting in the White House. Now, on Sunday, another topic here, Brinkley said something that caught my attention. He said, in Washington, referring to Filegate and Travelgate and the Whitewater scandal, he said, in Washington, the amount of power that you have depends on the number of secrets that you know. The amount of power you have depends on the number of secrets you know. Do you think that is true in Washington? What do you think? The number of secrets you know equates to the amount of power you have. Ooh, that's interesting. Dear Art, all weekend I heard Senator Simon and Leahy calling for the firing of Livingstone over the FBI files. I don't think the Clintons dare fire him. Do you remember during your first interview with Chris Ruddy that Chris described the dark policeman going through Vince Foster's pocket, even turning them inside out at Fort Marcy Park, and no keys were found? Then after Foster was removed to the morgue, he had two visitors from the White House who identified his body. And after these two people left, two sets of keys were found then in Foster's pockets. Those two people were William Kennedy, formerly of the Rose Law Firm, and Mr. Livingstone, according to Ruddy. As Senator Simpson says, oh, what a tangled web we weave. Well, you know the rest. It's Veda down in Whittier. We'll be right back. Supreme Court's backing a favorite tactic of law enforcement in the battle against accused drug criminals. Accused. The justices have reaffirmed the government's power to prosecute drug defendants on criminal charges while also seizing their property. The court rejected the notion Monday that the simultaneous use of civil forfeiture and prosecution violates a constitutional ban against punishing a person twice for the same crime. So maybe it's okay if you do it at the same time. If you did it later, then there might be a problem. As long as it is simultaneous punishment, I guess it's not considered twice. Now, even without issuing a ruling, the Supreme Court has handed President Clinton a victory in the sexual harassment lawsuit filed against him by former Arkansas State employee Paula Jones. They're not going to consider it this term. That means it will not come home to roost before the campaign. The MOVE people won their lawsuit in Philadelphia, and there'll be about $1.5 million paid out to them. A communist presidential challenger, Gennady Zyuganov, trailing Boris Yeltsin, wants a deal. No response yet from Yeltsin. AIDS in America. Last week, there was big news about protease inhibitors. And it seems now, with a combination of drugs, it is claimed that HIV can be driven back to the point that it cannot be even detected in the blood. This is really big, expensive news. The news on AIDS is not good. Of 513,486 that had contracted AIDS through December of last year, 62% of that number have died already. It is the leading cause of death for all men between 25 and 44. It is the third leading cause of death for all women between 25 and 44. People now, all of a sudden, thanks to these protease inhibitors and AZT, and I think there's one other drug involved, are actually able to get better. Long term, nobody knows yet. But we finally have something that drives HIV back. Just one little problem here. It's going to cost between $25,000 and $75,000 per year, per patient, to give them these drugs. And how do we afford that? It's under the category of just one little problem here. Do any of you have any ideas how we do it, whether we should do it, or whether we should just turn our backs on these people? If it is up to the taxpayer to come up with, what, $25,000 to $75,000 per year, per patient, what do you taxpayers say? Now, the alternative is obviously sure death. And so the issue is non-trivial. Did you know that four of five mothers having babies in Cleveland are single mothers? Now, that's an amazing figure, isn't it? Four out of five are having babies out of wedlock. How many of you remember the day when a young woman, pregnant and single, went away? She was in high school. She was pulled out. And everybody would wonder where she went. She was sent to a, you know, some sort of relative or away to another state or whatever. And then she would come back. And there was a stigma attached to such a thing. Today, it's not only the norm. I mean, four out of five in Cleveland. Try and imagine that. What has changed in our social system? So much that what used to be a stigma is now the accepted method. Four out of five in Cleveland, mid-America's Cleveland, are having their babies without benefit of matrimony. And the men are who knows where. That is a remarkable stat and quite a change since I recall the way it used to get handled when I was young. Well, listen, I've got some more, and we'll get to it, but time has run out, so here I must pause.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 24th of June, 1996.
Top of the morning to you, everybody. Here's an interesting little item. From time to time, I am asked where we are on satellite, so I'm going to give you that information, but apparently we're also now in a new place. I just got a piece of email from Luann in Nashville, or the Nashville area somewhere, and she said that she just discovered her station, WWTN 99.7, Nashville, is on satellite. And so if they're on satellite, that must mean my program is on satellite. So somebody might take a listen and see if you hear it on G5, in the clear, G5, transponder number 18, 738 and 756 stereo. Not that talk shows are cool necessarily in stereo, but I just ran across this and I thought I would pass it on to you all. Give it a try. G5, transponder 18, 7.38 and 7.56 in stereo. Take a listen. We're also on satellite F1. Transponder 5, 5.8 wideband audio. So you can look for us in either of those places. That was satellite F1. Transponder 5, 5.8 wideband audio. Hey, Art, I've got an idea. Maybe Hillary should contact Vince Foster. I'm sure he'd have a few enlightening words for her. Martin in Morro Bay. Then just one more item, and we will open the lines. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. Quickly, he was faced with a class action suit for failure to file an environmental impact statement. He was granted a temporary permit for the project, but was stymied with the cease and desist order for the earthly part. Appearing at the hearing, God was asked why he began his earthly project in the first place. He replied that he just liked to be creative. Then God said, "Let there be light." Officials immediately demanded to know how the light would be made. Would there be strip mining? What about thermal pollution? Now, God explained the light would come from a huge ball of fire. God was granted provisional permission to make light, assuming that no smoke would result from the ball of fire, that he would obtain a building permit and, to conserve energy, would have the light out half the time. God agreed. Said he'd call the light day and the darkness night. Officials replied that they were not interested in semantics. God said, "Let the earth bring forth green herb and as many seed." The EPA agreed so long as native seed was used. Then God said, "Let waters bring forth creeping creatures having life and the fowl that may fly over the earth." Officials pointed out this would require approval from the Department of Game, coordinated with the Heavenly Wildlife Federation and certain societies. Well, everything was okay until God said he wanted to complete the project in 6 days. Officials informed him it would take at least 200 days to review the application and the environmental impact statement. After that, there would be a public hearing. Then there would be 10 to 12 months before, at this point, God created hell. So there you have it. I have more, but not more time, so I'll slip some of the rest of this in as we go. Anything you would like to comment on, any topic you would like to bring up is just fine with me. Linda Howe did a very, very interesting report on the Roswell parts that I have Sunday. And I'm tempted to replay that portion of it because it is so, so incredible. It is a collage of scientists, people at Los Alamos, the nation's rare metal manufacturing companies, all saying they have no idea what we've got on our hands with this bismuth. It is a very, very compelling report, and I may play it. So for now, off we go into the land of open line talk radio. West of the Rockies, you're up first. Good morning.
Hello, Art Bell.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm all right.
My question for you would be...
All right, turn your radio off.
Okay.
That's number one.
My question for you is, you were saying how you were going to vote for Bob Dole.
Yep.
Because you don't think any other candidate has a chance.
Correct.
What do you think about, I know you said a Libertarian candidate doesn't have a chance either, but do you think if you agreed with a Libertarian candidate's beliefs more, you might vote for them instead of Bob Dole?
Yes. But I don't.
But you don't. What do you see wrong with the Libertarian Party right now?
It's too radical. It's still too radical. It always has been for me, and it still is. They want to legalize drugs.
Okay. See, I know they want to legalize some, but I didn't know they wanted to legalize everything.
Yeah, everything. No laws against drugs. No laws against anything that would involve an individual, according to them, not hurting anybody but the individual.
Well, I guess that's true to an extent. I know Isaac Asimov said something in one of his stories where they let drugs be free. And
Many conservatives have libertarian aspects to them. I'm one of them.
Yeah.
For example, I think that people should have absolute dominion over their own lives. If they're sane and they want to take themselves out because they've got some terrible fatal disease, to me, that's their business. Sure as hell isn't the government's. So
what if someone's just depressed and they want to kill themselves? What do you think about that? Do you think the government still has the right to say you can't do it?
I think the key phrase is of sound mind.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
All right?
I appreciate it.
All right, sir. Take care. No, that's right. I don't think anybody else has a chance. And Bob Dole, not much of one. That's who I will end up voting for. There is only one person that can beat Bill Clinton, and that is Bill Clinton right now. He's doing a very, very admirable job in that category. It is Bob Dole's best hope. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Art. Mark, yeah. Bolivar, Mark in Los Angeles.
Hello, Mark.
Almost got my last name in there. Love your show.
Can't wait
for you to have Richard Hoagland back on.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess he's back now from Europe. I haven't talked to him.
Okay. The point I called about was the Supreme Court ruling today.
Yes.
Where Judge Rehnquist said that this did not violate double jeopardy under Article 5.
Yes.
If you read a little bit further, though, it says, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law,
right,
which it clearly violates. The government is not giving the person a trial. They're just confiscating the property. And even, say, with landlords, you know, people who own small apartment buildings, the government's going in, and if their tenants have drugs, confiscating the landlord's property, even though he had no knowledge of what was going on.
Where did that happen?
I've read about several cases of this.
Oh, where? Give me one.
Can't give you one off the top of my head. There's also up here in Malibu.
That's because I don't think it's happened, sir. I really cannot imagine that a tenant would get a landlord's property confiscated. The personal property of the tenant, yes. The landlord's property, you're going to have to prove that one to me.
A fine hard copy, I'll fax it up to you.
All right, thank you. I'll look forward to that, and I'll be sure to read it to the audience when it arrives. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, hi, Art. This is Ed in Sunland, California.
Hi, Ed.
I'm afraid all I get in my seance is W.C. Fields. I didn't get any presents. All he wants is a drink, but anyway, let me ask you about the demon seed. Did you ever get the demon seed?
Yeah, I have them.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Are you planting them, or... What's happening?
I'm not sure what I'm going to do with them. They're kind of like, I would say they're like beans. Now, I guess those are like seeds, but they're the size of a, you know, pretty good-sized bean.
Mm-hmm.
And do I want to plant them? Do I want rotting flesh, uncontrollable plants? No. Not particularly. So I've just got them safely squirreled away.
Oh, wow. Well, I hope they don't start growing on their own. So.
Well, you know, in a horror movie, you know, and I know what would happen. Somebody would wander into the other room with a glass of water. They would trip. The water would go through the air in a big slosh and land right on the seeds, unbeknownst, of course, to the droppee. And we all know then what would happen. I would wake up in the middle of the night, and some plant would be munching on my foot.
Well, okay. Well, keep them safe and dry and away from...
I'll do that.
...government interference.
All right. Take care. Yeah. Just leave it to me. Parts from outer space. Demon seeds. I keep telling people I expect to go to the post office and find some special cage with iron bars waiting for me, thrashing around, no doubt, in the back of the post office, and the guy will rush forward and hand it to me. And inside there is going to be, you know what, a chupacabra. So if one shows up, if one's captured, I'm sure some demented person will send it to me. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art, Steve from South Dakota.
Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
All right.
I received your second newsletter today.
Ah.
On the moon.
Yes, sir.
I believe it's going to be hard to hit a moving target.
Well, that's right.
And I think we'll be scratching our head for four more years.
Mm-hmm.
Say, I called the Enterprise mission last week to check on an order for some material that I had ordered.
Yes.
Guess who answered the phone?
Richard?
Yes.
No kidding.
And he came back from England, and I guess he's going back over again.
Right.
And I told him about the show that you had with Graham Hancock. And he was glad to hear, very glad to hear that he was on.
Well, he had been urging me to have Graham on, and urging me, and I had no problem with that. Graham didn't show up in America until, you know, this month, so we had to wait.
Remember during his show, he was talking about the Sphinx.
Yes.
And he was mentioning about the Duat.
Yes.
The two constellations of Leo and Orion. Well, that's the Lion Man, and that's what the Sphinx is. And Mr. Hoagland, in his video, The Terrestrial Connection, mentions the feline hominid for the Sphinx.
All right.
Sort of interesting, you know, sort of like an interesting, you know, little comparison there, I thought.
They'd be fun to have on together.
Wouldn't they?
Yes.
Well, it's nice talking to you, Art.
All right, take care. Thank you. Art, I have had a chance to listen to your show a few times. Really enjoy it. I'm sure you've heard reports of this. Just wondering what your thoughts are. That about 80% of the domesticated honeybees have died, and all, basically all of the wild honeybees have died. This will do terrible destruction to the food here in America, food supply. Why aren't we hearing more about it? Possible government trying to stop panic over the food supply? Also, a quick theory as to why it happened. Maybe the government was attempting to deal with the Africanized honeybee problem and something went wrong. Could it be? From Dave. I don't know, Dave. I believe those stats, though, are about correct regarding the honeybees. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. It's been a long time. I haven't talked to you since back before the November 8th election. So.
Wow. Where are you?
I'm in Rancho Cucamonga, California.
All right.
I wanted to talk to you, Art, about something I heard a couple weeks ago on the news. I heard of an organization called Putting People First, and I wonder if you've ever heard of them.
It does ring a bell.
Well, it's the first group I've heard of that is out there, I guess, now to try to keep tabs on the animal rights groups and try to get out to people what they're doing. The woman they interviewed talked about, I think she said it was 313 different acts of terrorism in this country, according to FBI files, from 77 to 93. And it's something that you...
You mean the animal rights people breaking into research facilities, that kind of thing?
All kind, yeah. Arson, I guess all types of things. You probably talked about why the media does not link up the Unabomber with these type of left-wing animal right environmental groups like they tried to link up McVeigh with...
Well, one thing that has not been publicized, for example, is that the vice president's book was among those treasured little items that Mr. Kaczynski kept close to him. In fact,
right?
with underlined passages.
Mm-hmm. See, I wasn't aware of that.
Now you are.
You can't get these things from the media. It's not just McVeigh, but when you find out that they have been involved in these many different other acts of violence and terrorism, it's, I guess, just another example of why we got to turn to talk radio to get the truth.
Well, at least here you hear both sides, no matter how you feel about it. You will hear what you don't hear elsewhere. And, yes, I think it is important that people understand there is a link. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm deaf to environmental concerns, because far from it, I am not. But like so many other things, there is a decent middle ground. To me, as I said last week, you don't use animals to research makeup. You don't hurt animals and expend animal lives to create a new makeup. All right? But on the other hand, if you're doing AIDS research, then to me, it is a moral thing to use the life of an animal to save the life of a human being. Now, that's the middle ground that I would stake out and do. Just makes common sense. Wild Hard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art.
Yes, sir.
Why in the world should we not re-legalize drugs?
For the very reason that we made them illegal in the first place.
Well, we only made selected drugs illegal in the first place. We have a whole class of legalized drug lords walking into Congress and lying to them. We have a partnership for a so-called drug-free America who's propped up by the alcohol, tobacco, and pharmaceutical lobby, you know.
Well, the basic argument for not legalizing drugs, sir, is simple. We'd have a lot of druggies, people hooked on drugs, screwing up the productivity of the country, costing us billions of dollars in more medical treatment, blah, 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 on it goes. So,
well, like alcoholics and guys who can't quit smoking.
You're
and,
damn right. You're damn right. Only worse.
Only worse.
Yep. Is that it?
I guess I don't understand the line of thought why we subsidize one bunch of drug lords and throw the rest of them in jail. And
all right. Well, that's right. You don't understand. Why don't we legalize drugs? Because we would have a bunch of people hooked on very nasty drugs. Want to legalize PCP, heroin, crack? Have you lost your mind? Don't you know what kind of America you would have if you did that? So your arguments fall down like so many tenpins with a well-placed strike. I'm sorry. It just doesn't work. Talk about the decriminalization of marijuana, separating it from the other drugs? Yes, maybe. Legalizing all hard drugs? No. I'm sorry. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah, Art.
Hello?
Yeah, could you open up the alien line?
No.
Oh, come on.
No.
Why not?
I don't feel like it.
Fine. That's fine, but do it. Just do it.
Goodbye. No, I don't feel like it. If I wanted to open the alien line, I would open the alien line. I'm not in the mood. I don't want to hear from aliens this morning. Who do you think I am, Hillary Clinton? West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Good evening, Art. Buzz of the Radio Spy in Seattle.
Hey, hey.
A couple of things. Hillary Clinton channeling Eleanor Roosevelt and Mahatma Gandhi.
Yeah.
Seems pretty strange to me. Is she working off of an old list? and another thing, I know you're coming up on the top
of
the hour.
And sir, who prepared that list?
Good question. But you were asking if I was to channel a dead president?
That's right.
I have two of them that I'd channel.
Who'd you go for?
Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon.
Really?
I'd ask him if it's warm enough for him down there.
You think they're both down there stoking coal?
Oh, I think one of them's probably running the place.
Yeah, you're probably right about that, too. All right, thanks.
Okay,
see
bye.
You later. Yeah, who would you conjure up? What dead president? And what would you ask him? Boy, I'll tell you, it's a good thing we cannot talk to the dead, or we just keep them working and advising. Einstein, think about that. We'd be conjuring up all kinds of people for all kinds of nefarious reasons. Now, it's probably better that the dead stay dead, or at least in the plane of existence that they now reside, rather than being available for consultation. Boy, you imagine that? Able to consult the dead about anything? At any rate, we're going to break here at the top of the hour, and we'll be right back.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from June 24th, 1996.
Top of the morning, everybody. Good to be here. I am Art Bell, and this is Open Line Talk Radio. Well, all right. We're talking about, I don't know, all kinds of things. Hillary, her talk with the dead. Which dead president would you like to talk to? What would you ask her? And I say him because we've not had any females in that office yet. The FBI files, that is a very serious story. Very serious. Very serious. Of all the stories they've got right now, this holding on to files on Americans, that many of them, for 2 years, this has got a long way to go. And I think if none of these other things, Whitewater, The Travelgate business, which is, there may be an abuse there, I don't know. But I'll tell you, in this FBI files business, they have got real problems. Very serious, real problems. Now, it has not affected polls yet. President remains high in the polls. And maybe he's going to remain high through this, hard to believe. But he might. He just might. Listen, I've got something that I want to get on the air for you, and I will explain what it is in a moment. So get your pencils ready. You might want to make some notes. It is also available, as of right now, on my webpage, and I'll tell you all about it in a moment. I feel that I owe this to all of you. As you may know, I received what we call Art's Parts, along with several letters from a man who represents. These were from a crash in New Mexico, Roswell, or Socorro, we don't know. And we've been through the hoops on testing all of this stuff, and we have come a long way, baby. Linda Howe talked to a whole bunch of people in the rare metals industry. She talked to people at Los Alamos. She talked to people in all the right places. And I've got the answers for you. And I want you to listen very carefully to what Linda Howe has to say. And you may have to listen carefully because some of it is a little difficult to understand. But it documents where we are with Art's Parts, and it is an amazing place to be. Oh my, what I've got on my hands. Listen very closely.
It is turning out to be an unknown to date, which then raises even bigger questions about the so-called garden variety aluminum being used in some way that this man said.
You're saying as of this date, the bismuth magnesium layered piece is an unknown?
Yep. The past 2 weeks, I have talked to over two dozen people in universities, space research, metals manufacturing, superconductor research, and other exotic metal applications. And tonight, I'm going to share a sampling of some of those conversations, beginning with a metallurgist who works with metallic microstructures at Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque.
All right.
You are a metallurgist at Sandia?
Mm-hmm.
I
am a science journalist in Philadelphia, and I have been trying to identify some material that was brought to me to identify.
Uh-huh.
And I was referenced to Sandia from many people as being possibly an area that might have more information about this than I've been able to find out so far.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what we've learned, and then maybe you could give me your insights. They have two pieces that are approximately 1.5 inches long by about 1 inch wide, and the thickness is approximately 2 to 3 millimeters because it is not perfectly even.
Mm-hmm.
Then, in a scanning electron microscope EDS analysis so far, it is made up of 15 or 20 layers alternating this way. 1 to 2 microns of what appears so far to be pure bismuth. And the next layer is 100 to 200 microns of magnesium zinc. And the percentage of magnesium zinc appears at this point, they're going to do some more refined analysis, to be approximately 95 to 96% magnesium. And maybe 3% or so zinc. That's why they're going to do some more analysis, because they're a little puzzled.
Yeah.
What I've just described to you are the alternating layers that make up the 2 to 3 millimeters.
Right. Boy, that's a weird one.
Yeah, I don't have any idea. I've never heard of any such a laminate like that. I don't know where to tell you to go, unless you go to someplace like Dow Chemical that makes magnesium.
We don't do anything like that here within the Dow Chemical Company. We don't do anything regarding sheet or plate. I guess, and that's kind of where my thoughts are going with this. I don't know what the, what that end use is going to be for this.
What would bismuth and magnesium layered like that, what would that be able to function as?
That's a tough one. Off the top, I couldn't really say anything. I thought for a while mag is used maybe for light elemental purposes and all that, but bismuth is a heavy one. Of course, there's only 2 microns of bismuth compared to hundreds of microns of mag.
Mm-hmm.
Other than some high-strength reinforcement, off the top, I can't think of anything else.
Now, there might be some commercial alloys with those characteristics, but I wouldn't be able to see how they would get that discrete layer.
Meaning the...
Of the bismuth in there. This company, world's largest producer of magnesium, is Dow, D-O-W, Chemical.
Right.
Now, I know they have 1,000,001 alloys that they produce, and maybe they would be the ones to give a call. Maybe they can take a guess as to how someone would have got this layer of magnesium. I'm sorry, bismuth, between the magnesium. I don't know.
Okay, now, from your standpoint of working with exotic metals, what is the problem with sputtering bismuth on magnesium?
Okay, I can't give you a definitive answer. I've never heard of it done.
We do work with some exotic ones. I mean, we have some yttrium, neodymium, magnesium, and silver magnesium.
Is that for superconductors?
No, just for castings, for helicopters. This is stuff that we make every day, for big cases for helicopters.
Mm-hmm. And
not ever had any bismuth come across my desk.
Not ever?
No, never.
A Bureau of Mines, which is like an expert in bismuth material, and they may be able to help you, I don't know.
And I wondered if you could even tell me who works with bismuth in 1 to 2 micron film.
I've never heard of anything like that.
Do you know what this is?
I'll tell you, I haven't the slightest idea. It was found in New Mexico.
Right.
In the desert.
Right.
It's news to me. I frankly would see if you can get in touch with a metallurgist at Sandia National Laboratories.
And you're asking me if I know what this is? Or what?
Yeah.
I have no idea. What it, I mean, I could make some wild guesses, but I really don't know.
Do you know anybody who manufactures with bismuth and magnesium like this?
I haven't had a chance to look it up yet. It's using bismuth in an alloy is extremely rare to begin with. It's normally considered a trans element, which is undesirable in almost any material you use.
Really?
Yeah, it destroys most steels and things like that, essentially reduces their fracture toughness down to nothing. The one thing they do seem to use it for is for superplastic research.
Superplastic research?
Yeah, that's where you have metals that you can essentially keep on stretching out to 200 and 300% their length. And there's a possibility, not much, but there's a possibility that this is some sort of superplastic research, because that's the only place I've seen bismuth used on a regular basis.
Okay, now, is there a superplastic manufacturer I could go to?
Most of the bismuth alloys, that they don't actually use them commercially. They're just research, so I'd have to find a university that's done some research with it. It's usually bismuth tin, because that elongates to 400, 500%. It's one of the most superplastic alloys around.
Elongates to 400 to 500%.
This really probably is really stretching, because I don't, it, just looking by the thickness of the layers, I can't see how this would be involved with some sort of superplastic thing, and the magnesium zinc is still a puzzle.
Okay.
And there's also, I talked to one of the guys down at Metal Matrix Composites, because this is technically a metal matrix, and he used to work for McDonnell Douglas, and he guessed that there's a chance, considering where it was found, that this might have been part of a targeting drone. The reason you might get this very strange alloy and layer composition is when they put up these targeting drones, they try to reproduce the thermal signature and the radar signature of the aircraft they're trying to imitate.
Huh.
And so this might just be a materials combination that was put there because it had the right reflectivity and thermal properties.
Is there somebody I could talk to specifically about a metal matrix work this way, as well as the superplastic research?
I could put you through to Ted Muha. When I talked to him, he was basically baffled. he had never heard of anything like this. What I'll do is I'm gonna look through what I've got on just bismuth in general, see what I can find, what they've used it for in the past, and I'll see if I can find a match for anything close to this magnesium zinc alloy.
Great.
And I'll see who's been doing research and if there's anyone doing research currently.
That's what I need. And you are James Payne at the Department of Defense Metals Information Analysis Center. And where are you located?
We're also located at Purdue. We have four centers here for materials. We have a metal center, the metal matrix center, a ceramics center, and a high temperature material center.
Okay, so you guys, if anybody should be able to come up with somebody who's doing this research, you all should.
Yeah, that's our job, to keep the DOD informed on what research is going on in materials.
So there are some slices, Art, of some of the conversation.
So in other words, that was a collage of industry and government people who had no idea what this is.
That's right. And that is the bottom line from over two dozen conversations with people ranging from universities to research and development labs to exotic metals people to Dow Chemical. You could see I would get two and three references to the same place, so I knew that I was going around in a loop to Dow and Sandia Labs and some of the others. So I think it's also interesting here that one of our Dreamland listeners, Elmer Frombach of Synectics Research Inc. in Seattle, Washington, sent me a book entitled The Breakthrough, The Race for the Superconductor, about the work of scientists Paul Chu at the University of Houston and Robert Hazen at the Carnegie Institution of Washington's Geophysical Laboratory. In 1988, they discovered that a combination of the elements barium, yttrium, and copper oxide created a superconductor that would conduct energy at more manageable temperatures, didn't have to go so cold, known as the 1-2-3 superconductor because the formula is 1 yttrium, 2 barium, and 3 copper. It was considered a breakthrough toward limitless, cheap, and safe energy resources. Well, I looked up bismuth in the book's index, and there was one reference on one page in the epilogue, and this is what it said. Dr. Chu's team, intrigued by reports from France of 22K superconductivity and an oxide of bismuth, strontium, and copper, began to study chemical combinations of bismuth and copper. Shortly thereafter, laboratories in Houston independently found superconductivity in a new oxide chemical system containing bismuth, calcium, strontium, and copper. That mixture, they soon learned, yields a superconductor completely different from 1-2-3. A new race was on to characterize the unknown bismuth-bearing superconductor and to optimize its behavior, unquote. Well, this past week, I talked with Dr. Chu about the bismuth and magnesium zinc layered material. His first reaction was that he did not think it was a superconductor, and he suggested the combination might work as thermoelectrical material that creates electricity from heat. But he wants to know more, and we hope to work with him on our research. And I will keep, I have now a whole list of people to talk with this coming week, and I am continuing to learn more and more. And the bottom line, Art, is that this bismuth with magnesium zinc layered as it is, as of this date, is an unknown material.
Wow.
What
do I do with this stuff, Linda?
Hold on to it tight, Art.
All right. Well, there it is, and I thought that those of you in this audience deserve to hear it. That is a current update, and as you can hear, Linda talked to some of the top people in the country in rare metals, at universities, at DOD, at Sandia, and on and on and on, and nobody has even the slightest idea what this is. Strange, huh? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Is this Art?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I want to, I'm calling from Las Vegas.
Yes.
I ordered that radio from your friend in Fortuna.
Sea Crane Company? What radio would that be?
That was the one that advertises that you can... for 3 hours.
Oh, you mean Real Talk, yes.
Yes. It was wonderful. The size was wonderful. It didn't take up space on a night table because it goes up instead of out.
That's right.
But, you know, I was disappointed. They charged me. I had to send it back because I was stupid. I thought I could play the tapes in my car. I didn't realize you had to...
No, but that's why, you see, it operates on batteries.
Yeah.
You can plug it in or use batteries.
Yeah, it should have. But, you know, they charged me $20 to restock it.
Strange.
I was a little disappointed.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But I think that it was a wonderful radio. I just wish that I could have played the tapes in my car.
No. You see, we advertise that it operates at 1/4 speed. So, obviously, if it operates at 1/4 speed, when you put it in a regular tape player, it's going to sound like Mickey Mouse.
Well, sure, but I just didn't think about that.
I see.
We enjoy your program so much.
Well, thank you, and I'm glad you're going to apparently be able to tape it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just listening about that kind of metal that's
yes.
on your radio.
Yes.
Hang on. I just know what kind of metal it is, actually.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
You mean you without having examined it, are able to come up with an answer that the nation's best scientists and government people can't. By all means, tell me.
Well, actually, it's from my ship.
It's from your ship?
Yes, it sounds a little strange, but true.
Your ship?
Yes, my ship.
Where, pray tell, did your ship come from?
Well, it's kind of hard to tell because it came through the black hole.
Your ship came through a black hole?
Yes, it did.
Well, then you should be disintegrated pulp matter.
Well, you see, that's the thing. That kind of metal made it possible for me to go through.
Uh-huh. Why did you go through?
Because I was framed for a crime in my planet, and they sent me through this little tripod kind of thing. And
so, in other words, you're being punished?
Yes, I am.
Well, I don't think I like the idea that some other planetary system in another dimension is throwing its foul criminals into our dimension. No offense, I hope.
Well, you see, that's the thing. Like I said, I was framed. So.
Framed?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to say we're glad to have you, but we're not. Go home. criminal, go home. That's all I can say. It's a criminal alien. Oh, Mrs. Clinton, help.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
For those of you that would have computers and would like that audio report, the one I just aired, it is available in its entirety on my webpage. For those of you who had webpage trouble the other night after Dreamland, sorry about that. It was down for a while. Technical glitch. Back up and running just spiffy at the moment. So if you want to go up there and get it, it is www.artbell.com. www.artbell.com. That entire audio report up there, a very comprehensive one from Linda Howe, and I thought you should hear it. Weird stuff. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Diana, and I'm calling from KEX.
Yes.
Yes. Art, Good morning, I guess it is. Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
The reason I wanted to call you and talk to you was I wanted to discuss the situation with the new medication for the AIDS.
All right. What do you want to discuss?
Well, first of all, I'd say that right offhanded what the medical profession is going to be doing probably is... those people that can afford to pay for it will get it. And they will probably, the individuals that cannot afford to get it will probably not get it, because if you have AIDS, it's going to be very hard to obtain an insurance policy that would cover your medicine.
Yeah, well, you know, I suppose people who need a new heart have to come up with the money to get a new heart.
Yes,
people who have cancer have to come up with money to get radiation treatment and so forth and so on. Those are also, you know, if untreated, most times fatal.
That's true.
So there's not a lot of difference, is there?
No, there is absolutely none, actually.
It's going to cost between $25,000 and $75,000 per year, per patient.
Right, per patient. And we've got... more patients than the medical profession can even deal with at this point.
All right. Well, actually, of 513,486 that contracted AIDS through December of last year, 62% of that number are now dead. It's a leading cause of death for all men between 25 and 44. Third leading cause of death for all women between 25 and 44. Now, they've got these new drugs, protease inhibitors, which, along with AZT and one other drug, are actually driving AIDS in the blood down to undetectable levels. In other words, people are getting better. So the next question is, how do we afford this? Assuming that we've got a drug that keeps AIDS at bay, at best, and keeps somebody healthy... $25,000 to $75,000 a year per patient. Where do we get the money? Do we spend the money? Can we afford it? It's all you, the taxpayers. It's kind of like asking if they found a cure for cancer, or not a cure is a wrong word, if they found a way to keep cancer in an arrested condition, which is essentially what they're doing here with AIDS. Would we as taxpayers be willing to foot the bill? Or heart disease? Or anything else that will kill you left to progress to its natural end? It's a really good question. A lot of money for you guys, the taxpayers. I'm in there, too. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Missed you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. I heard a little while back on Lowell Ponte, the libertarian talk show host that's just before your show.
Yes.
He was talking about some UFO worshippers that were conspiring to poison some Republicans. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I heard some rumor about that. Yes, with some sort of radioactive material or something.
Yeah, Lowell said that you were not at all responsible for that or tied into that. Do you have any defense to that?
None whatsoever. I planned it.
Oh, okay. Well, Art, I also wanted to say that I agree with the Republican view on the war on drugs.
Well, good. I'm very gratified to hear that. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Oh, Rudy, it's Art.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. This is Turpentine in Modesto.
Turpentine?
Yes.
Is that your real name?
No, that's my CB handle.
Oh, I see. Turpentine.
Anyway, I talked to you about the Big Bang the other night.
Yes.
And I thought about what you said.
Yes.
About hitting the bottle full of liquid.
And having all the droplets, brown.
Having the droplets.
Yes.
And I was thinking, if you have a molten mass, in a cauldron, and you have one big ice of all the water in the universe come at it and hit it, when you drop water in something that's molten, it explodes. And when it explodes, it goes in every which direction. So that might be the reason why the planets are round.
Well, very good. You're essentially saying what I said. Yes. It's just, look, nobody knows. We weren't there for the Big Bang. We don't even know if there was a Big Bang. We presume there was a Big Bang. But there are lots of good questions connected to that. For example, scientists don't have the foggiest notion what there was 1/1,000,000,000th of a second before the Big Bang. Nobody knows. So without that knowledge, we can only theorize about the Big Bang. We have no way of knowing for certain that there even was one. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
I was wondering, did you hear about the Washington State Convention?
I know about it. Do you want to turn your radio off, please?
Just a second.
Yes.
Okay, it had some voodoo dolls on there in the likeness of Bob Dole.
Really?
Yeah, with pins on it, with instructions on
how to stick them, where to stick them, where to do
like
the most
good. Yeah,
with
heart disease and brain and cancer and stuff like that.
You mean to give Bob Dole some fatal disease?
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
I was wondering maybe we could get some action figures going at the Republican National Convention that maybe had Bill Clinton able to drop his pants or something. I don't know.
Where is it you're calling from with
Scott
these
City.
Insights? Pardon me?
Scott City, Missouri.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, that's as good a way to perhaps influence the course of this coming election as any other. Voodoo dolls. Do you think that works, sticking pins in a doll? If it did, I'd probably be writhing in pain all the time. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Well, I wanted the Antichrist line, but I'll have to do with this.
You'll have to make do. Yes.
Rittmeister Gerhardt, conservative in California.
Actually, any line you use could be called that.
Yes. And it's not what I called about, but I will say, since it has come up, that the war on drugs is nothing less than a war on American civil liberties, period.
No, it's more than that. It is that. It is obviously a war on civil liberties, and they are going to suffer as we continue the war on drugs, but it is more than just a war on civil liberties.
The war on drugs must die, because drugs are going to win. Now, I don't use anything, I use caffeine, now that's a drug. I use marijuana occasionally, but that's a beneficial herb. It's far from being an addictive drug.
You use marijuana?
Yes, sir. Now, I feel that, since we are no longer being eaten by lions and tigers and bears and other predators, that if people wish to commit suicide by using stupid things like heroin and cocaine, I feel that the human genetic pool is better served that these stupid people commit suicide. We would have far fewer liberals, for instance. But I know that Houston is online as I speak, so I'd like to send a shout-out to the so-called Christian identity types like Jeff in Houston who are listening. Jeff, you're a culturally confused white boy. On one hand, you badmouth Jews up, down, and sideways, but on the other hand, you buy, lock, stock, and barrel, the Bible, which is a book of Jewish mythology, and you worship this phony Yahweh, which is the god of the ancient Jews. Now that's sick.
All right, well, why don't you let people worship whoever they want? I don't have a problem with that. If you want to worship $100 bills, even the new ugly ones, go do it. I don't care. Your religion, your faith, that's your business. And I wouldn't endeavor to do what this man just did, no doubt under the influence of the leaf, taking a blast at somebody's faith. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of hearing people like this on the air. However weird it may be, a person's faith is their faith, and I don't want to sit here and argue about it. It's dumb. It's a waste of time. It's like racism. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, I got a quick comment and question. You can answer them both off the air if there's space for time there. First, are you going to ever soon have again that program about science with those guests that knew a lot about science, that deep stuff, and also a comment about the presidents and psychics? If I could talk to them, I'd want to talk to Herbert Hoover and say, why did you starve the United States but feed the Russians and get fat yourself while you were in office? Thanks.
No, you're welcome. So it'd be accusatory, huh? Well, with regard to guests, this program is very autonomous. In other words, I do what I feel like doing. And sometimes you feel like a guest, and sometimes you don't. And so I tend to go through cycles where I will have a lot of guests on the show, and then I don't. When I have a lot of good, relatively interesting guests, I don't just have a guest to have one. I look for the very interesting people. I have them on. It's as simple as that. So it's what I do with regard to guests is as unstructured as what I do on a normal basis every night. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art?
Yes.
Hi. First time calling.
Where are you?
WOAI San Antonio.
San Antonio, yes.
Yeah. Hey, listen. I was listening to Art's parts a minute ago.
Yes.
And remember when you had Major Danes on?
I do.
Okay, remember what he said?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well, isn't that weird? Remember Star Trek Journey Home when Scotty and Bones, I think, were looking for that aluminum to bring the whales home?
Yes.
Remember, and they went and they gave this guy all the, the components to build it?
Yes.
And they go, well, how come, how should we be doing this? And Scotty goes, well, how do we know he didn't invent it? So all this stuff that Linda Howe's out there putting out feelers to everybody, well, maybe somebody's going to invent it pretty soon.
Well, maybe they will. And if they do, and if it's of value, then great.
Yeah, I just thought it was kind of weird.
It is weird. And I don't know what to make of what I've got. What do you do with something like this? I'm telling you, you have no idea. The average person would think, God, great, I'm getting these possibly extraterrestrial parts and pieces, and how cool. Quickly, you realize that you have quite a situation on your hands, and it's not as cool as you thought it was. Back to it we go. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How you doing? Is this Art Bell?
Yes, it is.
Yes, Art, I really like your show, and what I really wanted to talk about was shortwave radio.
All right.
And I have a, my girlfriend, she just left a plane from Minnesota to Syria today because she's an archaeologist.
Right.
And I was wondering, like, if it would be possible to pick up your show in a place like Syria, because I plan on going with her on future trips.
Mm-hmm. The only way you could do it right now is the Internet. We are approaching the use of shortwave. That would work for you, but that is not up yet, so I can't tell you about it.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, if you get Internet access with a computer, sure.
Internet access with a computer?
Yes.
And that would actually, like, be able to carry radio waves?
Well, it's not exactly radio waves. It's done digitally. But, yes, you could, in Damascus... Just call an access number, get on the Internet, and listen to the program, sure.
That'd be great.
Well, that's how you do it.
Wow, thanks a lot, Art.
Time to learn about computers, sir. Learn a little about computers. They are incredible. East of the Rockies, whoops, you would have been on the line. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Janine from Oregon.
Yes.
How are you?
Fine.
You're having a good evening?
Just fine.
Did you have a hard time with the caller that tried to depict the guy who was having a hard time with Jewish people because his belief, his response to that was...
Well, he spent a lot of time describing somebody's belief as sick. I find that to be absolutely unproductive.
Well, he wasn't talking about his belief.
Somebody else's
faith.
Belief.
He was talking about racism, right?
Yeah, he was talking about somebody else's belief system.
Well, I was recently in Nevada, and I was at the hospital at Washoe. My son was in a coma. And while I was there, there was a collective family members, about 20 of them, that were holding a vigil in the lobby, and they were all dressed in black. And that's the point, among others, that I thought, well, this is a good reason why I want drugs legalized. It's because of the mafia, you know. There's a real good reason, and there's so many others. We're all victims of this situation. You've had guys on that you've talked to before about this.
The only people that are victims, are the people who use drugs, and you can't blame that on the mafia. You can't blame that on the president. You can't blame that on the government. You can only blame that on yourself. Now, insofar as his criticism of the so-called Christian identity movement was concerned, fine. I, too, find it a bit of a reach to imagine that anybody could be a white supremacist and support that belief with underlying racism, that racist belief, rather, with Christian principles, that is ludicrous. But then he went on to criticize a certain beliefs in Yahweh and all the rest of it, and that's where I start to get angry. I don't care what people believe. I really don't. As far as their faith is concerned, that's their business. That's your business. It's not mine. It's not the government's. And he should spend less time worrying about... his own little hatreds. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi, this is Lib in Minnesota.
Yes.
Yes, I wanted to call about the Big Bang and why the planets are round.
Okay.
The reason the planets are round is because they're so large. The larger something is, the more mass it has, and that draws all the pieces of the planet, whether they're gas or hard particles like the Earth, into a ball. If the Earth was small, it wouldn't be round. It would be any number of shapes.
Jagged as a asteroid, for example.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes sense. It does. In other words, the centrifugal force, otherwise known as gravity, which we don't fully understand, would draw that much mass into a circle.
Yeah, kind of like the way a droplet of water is drawn into a circle.
Yes. Makes sense.
And I just had to share that with everybody. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
All right, thanks.
And I'd like to say hi to all my friends on the internet. This is LibLion, and my modem blew up, so I haven't been able to talk to him.
All right. Well, I'm sure they just got the message. The Undernet. There's a name for you. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Art?
Yes.
Say, this is John in KQSB, Goleta.
Yes.
990.
Yes.
I was the one that suggested you use tuna to catch ghosts.
Yes.
And then you substituted that ghost for still another kitten?
Yes.
Cat?
Yes.
Do you still have that cat?
Oh, yes. Well, actually, the cat that we got immediately after Ghost is named Shadow. And Shadow is doing just great. The newest cat, I've got a good photograph of Comet. And it's right in character. And I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I'll tell you what. Maybe I'll put it on my webpage tomorrow for those of you who would like to see the progress of that little waif known as Comet. That streaking orange tabby.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 24th of June, 1996.
Good morning, everybody. Good to be here. You know, when you think about it a little bit, the First Lady would have been better off talking to Richard Nixon. Actually, he'd have been able to give her advice that would be much more applicable to her current situation than Eleanor Roosevelt or Mahatma Gandhi. Oh, well. Anyway, welcome in. We're going to have nothing but open lines all night long. And we'll begin again in a moment. Unless you've actually used the amazing nutritional supplement called NSC24, you may be wondering what all the fuss is about. Well, it's simple enough, really. NSC24 contains a technological breakthrough which has been scientifically proven to help ignite the immune system. Sound good? Well, it is good. I'm taking it. Lots of folks who need an immune system boost are turning to NSC24. Of course, you'd expect those who are dealing with degenerative disease to get this kind of help, people who need radiation or chemotherapy, those diagnosed as HIV positive. But NSC24 is also great for those under emotional stress, people with allergies, really anybody looking for an extra edge, like hard training athletes. And to top it off, NSC24 is one of the most effective anti-aging formulations on the market today. I like that part. So who should use NSC24? Anybody who would like to stimulate their immune system, feel better, look better, you can believe that includes me. If it includes you too, call them at 1-800-773-7034. Why not try this revolutionary immune enhancer, NSC24? 1-800-773-7034. Actually, I've been talking to a number of physicians about NSC24. And like most things, before I begin taking it, I mean, you want to know what it is. And they are raving about this. Raving about it. It is several generations up and past the antioxidants that have been flying around on the market. We advertise some of those here. NSC24, 1-800-773-7034. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Mr. Bell, how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Boy, I'll tell you, I feel so lucky getting a hold of you. If I had money and lived in Vegas, I'd be betting it right now.
Okay.
You're a hard guy to get through to.
Yes, sir. Where are you, by the way?
Well, I live in the country. I guess a town you might know would be Nebraska City.
Sure.
South of Omaha, 50, 60 miles.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, well, that's where I live. I just wanted to call you and tell you, I think you have an excellent show. Some of your guests are, well, like you like to say, a little weird or don't quite fit in the box, but some of the scientific endeavors that you get into really excite me to listen to them. I enjoy them a whole lot.
Good.
Comment on your book, The Art of Talk.
Yes, sir.
Would that mean that your next one's going to be For Whom the Bell Tolls?
For Whom the Bell Tolls. No, I'm actually... I'm actually thinking about writing another book.
Well, that would be good.
I swear I wouldn't, but I've got it in me, and it's beginning to take shape. I don't want to talk about it yet, but I've got a good idea.
Now, they say once you get the idea, if you don't sit down and get right to it, then it kind of drifts away, and you don't feel like getting down and trying to pull it back out of your mind again. So maybe that would be next week's endeavors or whatever. But I do enjoy listening to your show. I work at nights. I drive truck at night, and I listen to you as much as I can. Comes 1110 KFAB. I pick it up on that station.
Big signal.
Yeah, pretty big. Sometimes it's really weird. I've listened to it in Tucumcari, New Mexico, when I drove over the road.
Right.
I can be 50, 60 miles from it, from Omaha, and not even get it.
There is a reason. Generally, directional 50,000 watters go north and south. Not always, but a general rule is they do. So if you travel east or west, you would tend to lose them very quickly. Traveling north or south, you might hold on to them for thousands of miles.
Oh, that must be the reason, because I do. I go east of Omaha, you know, an hour or two, and as soon as I get 40 miles or so east, it's just like it disappears.
That's right.
Hmm. Well, that's quite enlightening. Well, thank you very much for taking my call. I do enjoy your show.
Thank you. All right, sir, keep listening. Well, listen, the way it works is they put up an array of towers instead of one tower. There will be three or as many as seven. And those towers, those additional towers, will determine the directionality of the signal. And literally anything can be done. They can send a signal in one direction and then another direction. And it is absolutely fascinating. Now, if there is only one tower, that would indicate non-directional characteristics. In other words, with one tower, there would be just about equal radiation in all directions. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah, Art, how you doing?
Fine.
Hey, yeah, this is Pat in St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Yes, sir.
I'm just curious. I've been listening to you now for off and on for a couple of months now, and this harp that you've been talking about... didn't you say there was a book out about that or something?
Angels Don't Play This Harp.
Angels?
Don't Play This Harp by Dr. Nick Begich.
Nick, how do you spell his last name?
B-E-G-I-C-H.
Nick Begich.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what exactly is this?
It is a project in Alaska, a directional antenna array to superheat the ionosphere.
Wow. That don't sound too good.
Dr. Begich does not think so either.
Oh, wow.
All right, so do a little reading, and then we'll talk about it. I've had the good doctor on here a number of times, talking, of course, about HARP. All right, back to the lines. Wild card line, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Mr. Bell.
Hello.
Hi, I was wondering if we could talk about, like, Nostradamus. My name is David from Seattle.
Okay, David, what do you want to say about the great?
Well, it's mostly about the comic, Haley Bob coming.
Hale Bob. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I found about five passages where he talks about a comet that comes out of nowhere.
Yes.
And what it brings with it.
Yes.
And would you be interested in hearing that?
You mean the direct quoting of quatrains?
Right, quatrains.
No, that's quite all right.
Okay, well, I'll summarize then.
Okay.
It talks about when a comet comes overhead, there's thirst, famine, blood of man and beast, a laying waste most dread. That's the first one.
All right. Well, that'll do. Thank you. You're quoting from the quatrains, and we don't quote quatrains, nor do we quote the Bible verbatim. First time caller line. You're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Art. I wanted to ask you two questions. I wanted to know, did that man ever send you those seeds?
Yes.
He did. You know which ones that said it turned into meat or something like that?
Yes.
Oh, I was just wondering if he ever did that.
Yes, he did.
Are you planning to do anything with them?
I have not yet decided what to do with them.
Yeah. And another thing, too, Art, couple of weeks ago when they spent they sent that space shuttle up, you told us what time to look outside. I was wondering if it's going to be the same way again, and would you let me know? You let us know.
You know I will.
Okay, thank you very much.
Take care. Many, many people rushed out at just the right moment and had the treat of a lifetime. So, yes, if the reentry occurs at an appropriate time, of course I will let you know. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, Art, this is Russell in L.A.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was kind of inspired by this thing with Hillary, and I thought maybe open a new business, become an agent for some of these dead people.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, you'd like to, maybe we could get a Walter Winchell on the show and you could, you know. Or, you know, I don't know. It would be, we call it Hillary's Dead People Hotline.
Hillary's Dead People Hotline. Well, as I said, I think more appropriate would have been Richard Nixon because he could advise her in this particular moment in time what not to do.
Yeah.
Or even what to do. Now, there was a time when Richard Nixon could have burned the Watergate tapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe if he would have, you know, talked to Attila the Hun or something. But I was kind of thinking that, you know, in this hotline deal that, I don't know, it could just go in so many directions and basically could have an endless stream of guests on your show.
Hillary's Hotline to the Dead. How about
but,
that?
You know, for a woman who's so self-confident and so smart, I'm really surprised how when she gets in front of grand juries, she tends to forget a lot of things, and now she's apparently doesn't have as much self-confidence as I thought, and she needs to consult with people like Eleanor Roosevelt. I don't know.
It's called grand jury forgetfulness. It's a common disease.
All right, Art.
All right, take care. Known to affect brain cells nearly instantaneously. As you turn around and face a grand jury, you know, all the information goes out of your head, and you cannot recall. That is the key operative phrase. If you don't want to say something, you just say, I don't recall. And if you don't recall, well, you really can't be charged for something you don't recall. And if you don't recall it, then you can't describe it, and you later cannot be shown to be having been untruthful, which would, of course, land you in jail. So, forgetfulness is a common disease in front of any jury. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Listen, it's good to get you on the air.
Where are you?
I'm in San Francisco.
Okay.
And the reason I wanted to talk to you is because I had heard you asking why it is that the polls don't show Clinton going down because of the things that he's doing.
Yes.
And the reason I think I could give you an analogy. If you had a job on your network and your boss was playing around with other women and it turned out he was a little bit dishonest, but you were desperate to keep your job, you might turn the other way. A lot of Americans are feeling economically desperate. Welfare people, people on Medi-Cal, people who need certain programs. And they've noticed that Clinton supports these programs and gives them the money they need.
Mm-hmm.
And they notice that the Republicans are talking about not giving it to them.
So they care less about Mr. Clinton's
well, I think
personal behavior.
Well, I think if we can go back to the analogy, you probably would prefer to keep your job if you didn't have another job immediately available. In other words, you talk an awful lot about all the immorality, but you don't talk about the economic hardship that the average American is going through now and the desperation he's in over it.
Well, I guess, ma'am, please pause for a moment, okay? Can you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you make it sound as though this is the Great Depression.
It is.
No, it isn't.
Well, you're not feeling it.
Well, it is not. I mean, statistically, if you look at the number of people,
corporate,
the jobless rate, If you look at the stock market.
I'm looking at the street, the people sleeping there in sleeping bags.
Well, there's always been people in
the
street.
No, there haven't.
Oh, yes, there have.
Never before.
Oh, there have, too. Are you kidding?
And I did want to mention another thing.
In San Francisco? Come on, there have been.
No, I've lived in this city 50 years, and I've never seen these people like they are now.
Well, then you haven't driven down to the right areas. Come on, give me a break. There have always been homeless. Are there markedly more homeless right now than ever before? Per capita? I don't think so. Is it rough out there? Yes, it is rough out there. Is it the Great Depression? No way. No way. Look at any economic statistic you want to. I accept the debt. Now, that's a separate story. But, I mean, in terms of the current condition of the economy, whether you want to look at unemployment or the performance of the stock market, or business inventories, or demand, or national sales figures, retail sales, or home sales, or whatever measure of the economy you want to use right now, you might argue that it's rough and that there is some downsizing going on, but the economy is also creating jobs. So it may be rough out there, but this is no Great Depression, and you sounded like you should be old enough to remember what a real recession or depression really is like. It's not like this, believe me. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art?
Yes.
Hi, this is Jay calling from North Bend, Coos Bay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi. I was calling, you know, there's a lot of politics going on. I thought I could change the subject a little bit, if I may.
Anything you want.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about aliens.
All right.
And I have a little theory, you know, there's one of the theories is that aliens are future human time travelers, you know?
Yes.
And I think the aliens might be mercantilists. You know, like USA takes over a smaller country and robs it of, you know, natural resources and brings it back to create jobs and stuff like that. So it could be like a natural resource that we have on Earth right now that we don't even know about, that the aliens are mining. And maybe
you know, has it occurred to you that we might be that natural resource?
Yeah. I mean, there's endless possibilities.
Yes.
And they might even be planting or growing or reproducing more of it. So they'll have even more in the future. Like if we could go back and, I don't know, somehow make oil more abundant or something like that. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Well, we would have to go back and conduct a genuinely massive breeding program for dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Prior to the KT event. So
yeah.
That when it came smashing down, we had more oil.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Just somehow massively produce.
I like it.
And, you know, I mean, it could be humans, it could be some plant in the rainforest that is so important to them that they would come back in time to get it.
You know about the population explosion, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are 5.5 billion people on the planet now.
Yeah.
That'll double, then double again. Think, sir, how much future crude oil that would be.
Yeah.
Mm. So you want something to think about? Think about that. I mean, using your own hypothetical situation, maybe we are, as we just suggested the dinosaurs would be, being bred right now as nothing more than a future source of petroleum products. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Jenny. I'm calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hi, Jenny.
I wanted to admonish you. First of all, I saw that segment on Russia, the 60 Minutes thing.
Yes.
If that wasn't the most pathetic thing, I can't imagine you're wanting to go. But let me admonish you. Be sure you lock your luggage when you leave your room.
No, I shall.
I had a friend of mine had gone years ago, and we were in China in 1981, and in those days, we stayed in many hotels, you know, where they didn't even lock the doors.
Yes, I was in China a year ago.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, Augie said, gosh, we didn't lock our doors. And he said, I just can't imagine the difference. I can't believe the difference between this and Russia. And he said he was sure that in Russia his luggage was gone through every single day.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Yeah. Well, have a good trip.
Oh, I plan on it. Thank you very much. I've thought about this 6 ways from Sunday. And why do I want to see it? Why do I want to see Russia, particularly Moscow, particularly dangerous as it is right now? And I'm not sure what my answer is. I just know I want to experience it. I want to see it for myself. And I have no good answer beyond that. I know it's dangerous. I know it's wild. And I know this is a particularly difficult political time in Russia. So why do I want to go into the middle of that? I don't know. I just do. Because, as they said about the mountain, it is there.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 24th of June, 1996. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from June 24th, 1996.
Hillary, Hillary, is that you? You will do as I say. You will take over the entire field of medicine. You will make it your own. You will socialize America.
So that's how it happened. You know I couldn't resist that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
My name's Tony.
Hi, Tony. Where are you?
I'm in Olympia.
Okay.
I made a bet with my friends that I can ask you any question that you couldn't answer since you've been like the guy that's been known to answer questions.
Well, you can try.
Okay. Here's one I've known for a while. 7-Eleven's open 24 hours a day, right?
Yes.
365 days a year?
So it says, yes.
Yeah. Why do they have locks on the doors?
In case they're robbed. Haven't you ever noticed when they're robbed, they lock the doors?
They do?
Yes.
Mm.
While the investigation goes on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, I got one more for you.
Okay.
If cars going at light speed and they turn the headlights on.
Yes.
What happens?
They go into another dimension.
Are you sure?
Yes.
So you've actually seen this happen?
Several times, yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mostly on the interstate.
Hmm. And I guess they were driving a beige Volvo, right?
Well, it wouldn't matter.
Oh.
Actually, it was a Geo Metro in the case I saw. All right?
Okay.
See you later. Glad to help you. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Art, this is Gloria from California.
Hello, Gloria.
And we live in Riverbank, California.
Okay.
And enjoy your show. I should be sleeping because I have to get up early, but I enjoy your show so much that
Thank you.
I have to keep listening. I'd like to talk about UFOs for a second, if I may.
You may.
I was a ground observer in 1958 in Santa Rosa, California.
A ground observer of what?
Of the air defense team.
Oh, I see.
And
What were you watching for? Foreign airplanes and invaders and
UFOs.
Stuff like that?
We had to learn the names of all of our planes. And my son was doing this, and when he graduated from high school, he went into the Air Force, and I took over his post, and we had a little building on top of the old courthouse in Santa Rosa, California, and one day while we were watching for planes and UFOs and whatever,
You mean you just sat up there and
Yeah.
Watch for planes and UFOs?
Right. Yeah.
You finally saw one, I take it.
No, I saw two.
Two.
They were like great big, they called them flying saucers in those days. And
they still do.
They were big round disks, and I thought, of course, that they might be weather balloons. And I had a partner. Well, there was always two of us.
So what did you do?
Well, when we saw these hovering over our tower, our little building up there on the courthouse, why, we knew we had to report them, but I didn't want to because I thought people think I'm crazy, you know.
But it was your job.
I know. And so my partner says, well, you're in charge of the post today. You've got to report it. So I finally gave in, and I called Hamilton Air Force Base.
And?
And I described what I had seen, and they were looked like big white balloons, really, but they were flat, you know.
So what did Hamilton say?
Well, they didn't say anything. They just thanked us for the call. They sent planes up to observe them and to see what they were.
Did they stay there while the Hamilton...
No, they didn't. They took
not.
Off like... well, they went so fast that they didn't look like anything moving. They looked more like a streak going across the sky. They went so fast.
Well, there you are. Typical UFO story. And the poor guys from Hamilton probably came screaming out at about Mach 1 or a little better. Little under, and didn't even have a chance of catching them. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Art.
Yes.
How are you doing?
Okay.
I can't believe I got through. A couple comments, sir. The lady that called in about the homeless people and how great the numbers are.
Yes.
8 Mile Road in Detroit. I drive 7. I get all over the place. There are people standing on 8 Mile Road holding signs up. Homeless need help. Right across the street, just $7-$8 an hour, all kinds of jobs. You know, the people don't want to work. They choose not to.
Many do. That's right.
Many, many. The other point about the drugs in America, I am a very anti-drug person, but they need to legalize it because the system we have is a major failure. We've spent billions of dollars. And the drug problem is worse now than ever.
Yeah. All right. All right. Now, let's talk about that a little bit. I'm fully prepared to admit that the drug war is and has been an abject failure. Does that mean that we should declare the war over? We lose, run the white flag up at the White House, and just legalize all drugs? No. Not my opinion. In my opinion, if we're going to wage a war on drugs, then we should really do it. We should go after every aspect of the drug problem. We should have people in South America laying waste to the fields that produce the crops, that produce the drugs. It's a national security issue. We should be interdicting in a way we've never done before. We should be careful. We don't want to shoot down Dennis. But anybody else, we should take out. At the street level, we should do everything within our power. Perhaps not attacking the users because there are too many of them. But attacking the supply lines, attacking the manufacturer. We should be interdicting like crazy. There's all kinds of things we could really be doing to continue and prosecute a real war on drugs. Now, I know, as long as there is a demand, there will be a supply, and they'll figure out how to get some sort of supply here. But if we ever made a serious effort, which I don't expect we're going to do under this president, to do something about drugs, we really could get it done. That's my opinion. Run up the white flag and just make all drugs available. No more laws. No thank you. I can imagine the kind of America we would have, and I don't want that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello?
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 Going once.
Hello?
Going twice. Gone. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art, how the heck are you?
Okay.
My name is Rich. I'm calling from Dubuque, Iowa.
Yes, sir.
And I just wanted to shed a little bit of light on the subject you were talking about earlier, bees.
Oh, yes, the honeybees.
I don't want to put myself off as an expert. I'm a new beekeeper. And, excuse me, I want to speak a little bit to the issue of, you know, what's kind of going on with the bees and the population being wiped out somewhere around the mid-80s. You've got a mite, which is believed to come from Europe.
Right.
Somehow it came over here. You've got a tracheal mite and a Verona mite.
Right.
And if I'm correct, I believe the tracheal mite attaches itself to the bee and, for lack of a better description, kind of drains the blood out of it.
Mm-hmm.
This is usually something that occurs during the winter.
What will happen? Yes, I'm aware of all this. It sounds like a tracheal mite has attached itself to you. Are you okay?
Yeah, it's a little cold I've got going on here. Yes,
if the majority of the honeybees or the wild bees disappear, I'm more interested, since it is occurring, in what the impact of that will be.
Well, from what I understand, first of all, you know, I don't believe that this is going to be as significant as people think it's going to be.
If 80% of them are gone, and I believe that is an accurate figure, that would seem fairly serious to me.
That is serious, and I'm not saying it isn't. But like anything else, I believe that in nature there's cycles,
mm-hmm.
and different species have problems. Now, there have already been some cases of bees that have literally fought back and cut the heads off of the mites.
Uh-huh.
And this has the beekeepers all over the world scrambling. This is somewhere, I believe, in the United States, to find out why this is occurring. In other words, they're becoming somewhat resistant. So as far as I'm concerned, I think it's only a matter of time until, you know, they develop something, maybe a stronger strain of bee, and that, you know, they can fight back against this. And eventually, just like you see in many areas where, you know, turkeys and deer and other animals.
Yes, but in the meantime, aren't honeybees responsible for a great deal of the pollination that goes on?
Yes, they are. And, you know, this is just my personal theory. But I would blame some of this on beekeepers. There's these strips, they're a chemical strip that you can put on your hive. A lot of beekeepers don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the beekeepers have been in the business for years. Have kind of poo-pooed the mites and have brought this on. And also, my own personal theory is that you have migratory beekeepers that will bring bees and drop them off in almond orchards, apple orchards. A lot of these guys drop their beehives off and ignore them.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm more interested at this point in the effect of 80% less pollination. Generally, if we have 80% less pollination by honeybees, even at current figures, what will that do? What effect will that have? I don't know enough about it to know, but I'm sure somebody out there does. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Ed, Beeson, Illinois.
Yes, sir.
Here yet of WTAZ in Peoria.
You
one
bet.
Of, one of the few FM stations.
Yes, sir.
Reason I'm calling is last February, I was in Las Vegas and drove through the beautiful Pahrump Valley.
Yes.
I hoped to get back this summer, but I didn't. So I really would like information on kind of what's the temperature like, you know, daytime, nighttime, right now. What am I missing?
What is the temperature like now? It's probably about, I'm going to guess, about 75 degrees right now.
Oh, that's super. Oh, I'm missing it. And I'm sorry. Hey, one more thing.
Yes?
You were talking about Hillary and talking with Nixon?
Yes.
Wasn't she on the, a member of the committee? She wasn't the chairman that investigated him?
Yes, she was. But apparently she did not learn the lessons of Watergate that well. Because the way everything's unfolding around the White House right now, and she's square in the middle of it, maybe we are destined, maybe that's karma. Now, the First Lady likes New Age kind of stuff. Maybe there's a karmic answer to what's occurring to the White House right now with Filegate and all the rest of it, Whitewater, but mostly Filegate. Maybe there is a karmic answer to this. She did indeed work on a legal staff that had involvement with the whole Watergate business, and now she is destined karmically to relive it from the other end. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I'm east of the Rockies. I ended up getting the wrong number. Is this Hart?
It is. Where are you?
I'm actually in Colorado.
Okay. Well, that's included in the West.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm in northern Colorado. One thing I was wondering, you were talking about the medal that you had earlier?
Well, I played the tape, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you were talking about the medal and stuff that you had on there. Do you know where who sent it to you, or did you just get it anonymously?
It was anonymously delivered from Charleston, South Carolina.
From Charleston, South Carolina. Okay, do you think in any way, shape, or form that it could be related to anything at the Roswell crash or the 1962 crash?
Yes.
Okay. And something else that I was wondering, too, if you look at all the major events that we had, like the earthquakes we had in Hong Kong a couple years back here and stuff like that, every time something like that happens, there's always been sightings in the sky of a cluster of approximately 10 lights. They keep showing up.
Yeah.
And some people theorize and believe, you know, well, okay, could this be something that is, you know, like they know what's going to happen and they show up to watch it? Or do you think that actually they could be, in fact, causing it and they're, you know, in fact, watching to see how we as humans react and how we, you know, how we make up after something like that happens?
Maybe they just dig disasters.
Okay.
How's that? All right.
Could be.
Disaster in Time was the movie, and it involved people traveling back in time just to be tourists when a disaster would occur. That movie included as I recall, some people that were touring a little town where an asteroid meteor was going to plow in and destroy part of the town. And they just traveled back, and they came from a perfect world where nothing ever went wrong. Nothing ever went wrong. And so to get their kicks, they had to do more than travel Route 66. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Bell.
Hello.
Well, I've got a question that no one else seems to be able to answer, and you're going to think I'm an imbecile for asking this, but, you know, in the theme song to the Flintstones?
Yeah.
The line that goes after the one that says, let's ride with the family down the street, blah, blah, blah. I can't seem to figure out what they say. And no one seems to be able to answer it.
I have no idea. I don't watch the Flintstones, so I couldn't tell you, sir.
Oh, wait. I got another question, like, from that guy called earlier from Olympia.
Yes.
Why is it that when the bad guys are shooting at Superman, he, like, stands straight up, but when they throw the gun at him, he ducks?
You know, that's a very good question. Why indeed? That's right. When they'd shoot at him, Superman would stand there and take the bullet, right? And it would bounce off him. But when they would throw the gun, he would duck. I never thought of that before. Intriguing question. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, is this Art?
Yes.
Yeah, Art, I had a question about, is there such a thing as astral projection?
Yes.
And how does that kind of work?
Well, it's kind of like you leave your body, and you project yourself to another place. You are still connected by a long, very skinny, stretched line of plasma.
Uh-huh.
And then you can snap back to your body. That's how it is supposed to work.
Okay.
That's it, huh?
Well, are there any books on that at all? And is it
many books,
too?
Yes. Oh, yes. Go into a bookstore, as I've heard them talking about now all day long on TV and during the news because of the Hillary Clinton business, and you will find, I believe it was Cokie Roberts, who said over the weekend that you go into any bookstore and there will be acres of books on this kind of thing, and there are. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art. This is Jeff in Houston.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I was just, last time I talked to you, I was talking to you about Identity Christian.
Yes.
And I'd recommend that you get Pastor Butler on the air.
Pastor,
do you recall that?
Butler. Vaguely.
I was just wondering if you had spoken to him.
No, I don't have his number.
If you like to, I can hold on in the break and give you the way to get in contact with him.
I might go for such a thing. Hold on. I'll put you on hold, and we'll see about that. The whole concept seems absolutely ludicrous to me. White supremacy buoyed by Christian principles. Only in America.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
George in Tennessee says, Art, I understand your concern that you are not getting many people aggravated and calling about Filegate. You know what I think? I think the American citizen is so aggravated, in fact, at our government now, that they have literally given up on trying to make it any better. It's like, why make a big deal when the end result will be a pardon or a slap on the wrist? Now, I realize it's a cop-out kind of attitude. And just one more thing, as far as I'm concerned, that contributes to the quickening. Now, maybe George has it right. Maybe we have been subjected to one scandal after another, after another, after another, to the point that we're all getting a little numb. Is that possible? First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
I'll be darned. I won the lottery.
Yes, you did. Welcome.
Hey, Art, how you doing? This is Angel Eyes.
Yes, sir.
Listen, I love your show. I just want to ask you two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, have you seen the new flyer out there? It's a joke about Bill Clinton and the Chupacabra.
I believe I have, yes.
Okay, it's got an FBI thing on there for people who haven't seen it. It's got Bill Clinton to the right and the Chupa on the left, and it says, will the real Bill Clinton please stand up? And it says, wanted by the FBI for sucking the lifeblood out of society?
Yes.
Okay. And number two, Art, did you know that guy that the other night that called you about, I don't know, he was talking about something about some weird language or something that was sent to you?
Yes.
Was there anything to that, or?
Well, I haven't found it yet, so I don't know.
Okay, so it may or may not be legit.
Right.
Okay. Well, Art, I love your show, man.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the call. Yeah, I don't know. It was something supposedly sent in the mail, and I haven't seen it yet, so I can't comment. Dear Art, I just tuned in, so I don't know if anybody's called you about this yet. Graham Hancock spoke in Santa Monica tonight. His talk, of course, covered material similar to that which was discussed on your show, but in more detail, and he gave a slide presentation that clarified many of his astronomical findings. The audience seemed to be comprised of your people. One guy actually polled the audience, saying, hey, are you here because of the Art Bell Show? There were a lot of yes nods. I also heard Mr. Hancock's wife refer to you as wonderful Art Bell. I can't say I disagree. It's very nice. Perhaps in the future, Graham will return to your show. It was a standing room only audience at the Phoenix Bookstore tonight, and I suspect interest will only grow as the story develops. Plotting the Pyramids in Pasadena. So glad to hear it went well. First-time callers call area 702-727-1222. Now, see, now that you made me hit the button, Robert.
I'm sorry.
Your name is Robert, and where are you calling from?
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City, all right.
Yeah, I'm wondering, do you still have the number for calling you from overseas?
Oh, yes.
Could I get that? Because I'm going to Russia July the 1st.
July 1st, huh?
Yep.
Well, maybe you can give me a little information.
Okay.
Are you going to Moscow?
I'll be going through Moscow. I work in Siberia.
Oh, boy. it's 800.
Okay.
893-0903.
0903. Okay. When will you be going?
I'm going about August 2nd.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're supposed to have their election there on the 3rd, I believe.
Yes, July 3rd.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. Either way it turns out, it looks to me like trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, they got off there with saying that they want to bulldoze the McDonald's and the Pizza Huts.
Yeah, I've been hearing that.
But, I don't know, it seems like the people in the cities are for Yeltsin, but the people out in the country are for going back to the communists. They're willing to trade freedom for security.
Yes, well, they always were. That's what they had. So be sure and give me a call and let me know. I would be very interested in your impressions of Moscow as you go through. I'm looking forward to it myself. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Yes, Art.
Yes.
David in Port Townsend.
Yes, sir.
I actually had the radio off for a bit, so I don't really know what you've been talking about recently, but I want to say that I think that television is the most dangerous drug out there.
You do?
Yeah. People watch this thing for 6 hours a day.
Well, just...
Virtually the whole population uses it, puts them in a hypnotic daze, does their thinking for them, and tells them what to do.
Just say no.
Just say no. Just don't even have the thing.
Well, it depends on how you use it. You can abuse it. It's like anything else. We were talking about that earlier. You can abuse TV. You can be a junkie. You can get to the point where you must have it. Now, I use television, and there are certain programs that I watch, news, information-type programs. Other than that, and an occasional movie, because I am a movie buff, I leave regular fare alone. You know what I've been watching? I'll tell you what I've been watching lately. The only TV show that I ever really... Well, I can't say it's the only one I liked. In fact, we ought to talk about this sometime. I'm watching Hill Street Blues on a channel called TV Land. And they run Hill Street every day. God, that was a good show. Boy, that was good TV. Hill Street was a superb television show. I would say... Right up there in the top 1%. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm live on the air?
Well, unless you're dead, you're certainly
no,
on the air.
My radio is doing the exact opposite thing.
Well, what you should be doing is turning your radio off.
It's in the other room. I'm sorry. I can't do that.
Okay. Well, then I'm sorry. I can't talk to you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Good morning to you.
This is Jake calling from the new desert of America in the Mid-South Plains.
Yes, sir.
I'm in Oklahoma. I wanted to talk to you. I remember something Major Dane said about we would have the technology to deal with certain catastrophes that would be bestowed upon us.
Yes.
And, we've talked a lot about water, and I can tell you in agricultural circles right now, in these big irrigation circles that we use out here, they will run sometimes up to 1,200 to 1,500 gallons of water a minute through the systems. And we already have engineered systems that can take that down to 200 gallons a minute.
Wow.
And of course, the big thing is cost. But with any kind of agricultural enterprise, you're always going to have cost as a factor. And over the long term, if you'll average out the cost of pumping that water from 300 feet down, it sure does equal out. And most states have already implemented flow meters on the irrigation wells, and so it's being dealt with. And yes, the aquifer is dropping, and yes, rainfall, even though we've received some relieving rains, we're still way, way behind for the year. But we have the technology to deal with it if people would just embrace it and accept the fact that we've got to start living a little differently.
All right, sir. I appreciate the call. I don't think that the tapping of very deep aquifers 300 feet and more down would be but a stopgap measure if there really was a change that, in other words, man's attempt to keep the Midwest from turning into a desert would absolutely fail. In my opinion, absolutely fail. If it is going to change, if the nature of the climate across the Midwest Farm Belt is going to change, then I assure you, trying to pump from deep aquifers is not going to save us. I assure you, those levels would quickly fall, and at any rate, without rainfall to bolster them, they would not be available very long, and I assure you, nature would win that war. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes, Art, this is Apple Nally calling you.
Yes.
Been quite a while.
Has been, yes.
We hear an awful lot about the media bias, but I'm equally concerned about what I call media bypass or disconnect. And the current bone of contention is the president's recent introduction of an entirely new entitlement in the way of guaranteed 2 additional years of education for all high school graduates.
Yes.
I have heard nobody even pause to mention to him when he said he wants 14 years of public education. That we, when you count the kindergarten and Head Start, we already have 14.
Mm-hmm. Well, haven't even heard very much comment about his recommendation for 2 years of college for people who maintain a certain grade point average. And
yes.
The reason is because the American people know it's baloney in the first place, and it's not going to happen.
Well, but there's an awful hard point in there, too, about the whole concept, because he's mentioned that they'll get $1,500 per year, but that is only the tip of the iceberg. He talked about how he'd finance that, but he hasn't.
Well, I'm trying to tell you, it's not going to happen.
Well, I don't know whether it'll happen or not. Some of these things are floated out there, and it'll start up a new entitlement. Depending upon who is in control of Congress and the Oval Office.
Well, at the moment, the Republicans are.
Oh, I know that, but that's no guarantee from the looks of things.
Oh, look, this is, thank you, this is just another promise made by a man who will say anything to get reelected, and that's exactly the way the American people view it. It went by, didn't even cause a ripple. How many promises has this man made that he has broken? His promises, his word, means nothing. Now, apparently the American people like to hear this kind of stuff. Sounds good. Comes rolling off the lips, but they have learned that he does not do what he says he will do. I expect, as he gets in more and more trouble, he's going to start talking very soon about changing welfare as we know it. Every time this president gets in trouble, he wants to change welfare. And it's all talk. And the American people know it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
I'm a first-time caller. I've listened to your show for about 2 months.
Okay, where are you?
I'm in St. Joseph, Missouri.
Yes, sir.
And I just want to say that the more I listen to you, the more respect I get, I have for you, because like you said earlier in your program tonight, you present both sides of the issue and let the listener decide, and that's respectable. You don't find that too much anymore.
Well, that really is true in talk radio. You don't find that a lot in talk radio.
And that one caller, that there's been several topics that I'd like to discuss, but I'm going to take two. And one was, you were talking about people not bashing other people for having different beliefs. I agree with that. The only problem I would have with that is, as I don't mind people having different beliefs. That's what makes the world go round, is people being different. But the only problem I have is when people force their beliefs on me and try to get me to believe them. I respect.
It's different.
Yeah, I respect the person.
It's different. If they want to, look, if they want to worship Yahweh or a $100 bill, or God, the God that I understand is there, or whatever, I don't care. And I'm tired of hearing people bash other people's religious preference. I don't care what people worship.
And to me, it's not just religious preferences, it's life preferences.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I enjoy your show, and I hope it's on for a long time.
All
have
right,
a good
thank
morning.
You have a good morning, too. I really don't care what people believe. I'm not offended that people have beliefs that differ from mine. I am offended that so many people are offended to find out there are others out there with belief that doesn't coincide with theirs. We spend altogether too much time worrying about other people's belief systems. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good evening. How are you?
Okay.
This is Greg in Canyon Country, California.
Yes.
And I'd just like to say in regards to the caller he had just a little while ago in Port Townsend, I believe it was, Washington.
Yes.
What he should do is get interested in ham radio if he is so afraid of television.
Well, that's one thing he could do, or just listen to radio generally.
That's right. I've been a ham myself for 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good hobby.
Yes, it is.
And take Wayne Green's advice, and I'll sign him up.
All right, sir.
So,
thank you very much for the call. Ham radio is a wonderful hobby. There's no question about it. But radio in general is better than TV anyway. So there you are. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hey.
Hey.
Calling from Stockton, California.
All right.
Hey, you do sound a lot different on the phone at the trip. So, what I was wondering is Bob Crane still selling those cordless phones, or are those gone?
He's still got them, but not for much longer. Stock on these is almost gone.
So what do they look like? Are they like a little cell phone, or is it like more traditional type cell phone? I mean, a cordless, I mean.
More like a traditional, it's kind of a cross between cellular and regular cordless.
I mean, I understand the technology is different. I'm just curious how they packaged it, you know?
Very nice, very handsome. If you get his catalog, you can see a photo.
Can you still get it?
Sure.
Okay, because you said last night that you can only get it over the weekend.
Well, yeah, I've got to be careful here because they were so swamped with catalog calls today. But, yes, I would say get his catalog.
Do you have to, is it free or do you have to pay for it? The catalog.
You call Bob Crane and ask.
Okay.
All right?
All right, later.
All right, take care. Wild card line, you're on the air.
All right, let me hit mute. Okay, Art. First, I have a few things for you here. First of all, is your Geo blue?
No.
Oh. Does your wife have a car?
Yes, she does.
Is it a red or a brown?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Why?
Well, because I was practicing that remote viewing and, like,
oh.
I thought I saw two cars sitting in a garage.
Miss.
Anyways, I...
Wrong garage.
Probably. Anyways, I'd like to say that marijuana, it is addictable, because I used to be addicted to it psychologically.
Uh-huh.
It used to be where you'd smoke so much pot that pretty much everything else in your everyday life was boring. Nothing else was fun but smoking pot.
Well,
and
that sounds like a psychological addiction.
Yeah, and I've seen it affect quite a few people. And also, this thing about scientists, they went and say that, our whole solar system was, you know, made in so many thousands of years, you know, the Big Bang, all that stuff.
Yes.
I know it to be true that that is partially true.
You know it to be true that that is partially true.
And this bit with the God created the earth and everything in 7 days, that is also true.
So
you have to realize...
I thought he rested on day seven. Did it in six, actually.
Well, yeah. Okay, you got me there.
Well, I don't have you. The Bible has you. How do you know it to be true?
Well, one thing you have to think about is that God does not live in this. His time is not our time, nor is our time his time. He, like, one of his days is, like, equal to something like 20,000 of our years.
How do you know?
Oh, well, it was taught to me in church.
I see. All right, thank you. So you accept it then as an article of faith. There was a very good joke about that that I cannot remember in sufficient form to retell it to you right now, but God, it was funny. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Art.
Yes.
I need to ask you a very big question, man.
All right.
Okay.
I hope I can give you a very big answer.
Okay. Okay, you know how the people are saying that the gorillas are our ancestors or whatever, stuff like that? Or there's the Adam and Eve idea?
Yes.
Well,
it's commonly called creation or evolution.
Well, yeah. What if, like, the evolution was aliens or something?
What if it was?
I know, I'm just saying.
Well, then you're a relative of an alien.
That sounds like fun.
It does?
Yeah. I have another question for you.
What?
Does your wife know you're gay?
You apparently are. You must be. Are you gay?
Yes, I am.
I see. Well, I'm not. I'm heterosexual. And my wife would be glad to attest to that.
Okay.
Is that it?
That's it. Thanks a lot.
Stop smoking that stuff, sir. Wild card line, you're on the air.
Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Jim from L.A.
Hello, Jim.
I'm glad to be here. Hey, you mentioned you didn't think anybody could beat Clinton.
That's right.
I was trying to think of a ticket.
I don't know about anybody. I didn't really say that. What I said is I don't think Bob Dole can beat Bill Clinton.
I don't think he can either without some kind of conviction.
However, Bill Clinton can beat Bill Clinton. And right now, he's doing a good job.
Can I hang on?
Sure. Hang. Bill Clinton can certainly do himself in. And the way they're handling a lot of this scandal right now is going to lead to real trouble. Depend on it. Contempt of Congress, up and coming, probably this week. There's about 2,000 more files they need to hand over. The current scandal produced from the first 1,000.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Here I am, and here's my caller. You're back on the air again, sir.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Well, I was trying to think of a ticket, and actually it would be out of the Reform Party. Colin Powell and one of those senators who quit.
Colin Powell doesn't want to run.
Well, please hear me out, just as a suggestion.
I'm listening.
Either one of the senators that said they just didn't feel they were doing anything, preferably one of the Democrats, or a woman for VP. I'd love to see it.
No, you're not going to see it.
Don't you think it might do some good?
I don't know. A lot of things might, wish and hope. You got Dole and you got Clinton. That's what's going to be.
Yeah. I think Powell, there's too much, it seems to me, division here and one party playing itself off against the other. Nothing's getting done.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
I said I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, I think they could do a heck of a lot more. And I think, though, when we start playing Democrats against Republicans and vice versa, nothing really gets done. We get some kind of impartial leadership.
That is what the American people vote for, sir. They vote generally a president of one party and a Congress of the other. Have you noticed? Look at all of recent history. The American people vote for gridlock, and maybe there is some wisdom attached to what they do, some sort of deep wisdom that we may not understand, that they don't want government to do too much one way or the other. And if you've got one party in one branch and another party in another branch, government ends up not doing too much. And maybe that's just the way the American do the wild thing. It's 702-727-1295. I'm sorry, but you're not allowed to give your last name on the air.
I know, I'm sorry.
And when you do, I've got to push the button and erase it. So that's what I just had to do. What is your first name?
Ursula.
And where are you calling from, Ursula?
From Illinois.
Okay.
And I'm German, and Rick Meister Gerd calls in.
Yes.
And I want to explain what he does is his title he's trying to say.
And what do you think he's saying?
He's saying that he's Rick. It's not Rick, but it's really it's Rick. Rick. And Rich means like judge master, like he can judge over everybody.
Yes.
Well, he's a little loony,
yes.
But I thought I'd tell you.
Well, I already knew that, but I appreciate that reinforcement. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Yes, Art Bell, this is Sandy from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I wanted to let you know, in case you don't know already, the woman who consulted with Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Her name is Jean Houston.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
She is the same Jean Houston that Dr. Mitchell mentioned in his discussion with Richard Hoagland.
Okay.
And she is a close a personal friend of Dr. Mitchell. She's an author, and she's really brilliant. She has studied human consciousness for a long time and has consulted with a lot of people really all over the world.
And apparently beyond it as well.
At any rate, the next time you talk to Edgar Mitchell, if you think of it and are still interested in it, you might ask his take on that.
I will do so.
I doubt that he'll say anything negative of her because he said in his discussion with Richard Hoagland that he she was a close personal friend, and I think that he has a very high opinion of her.
I am not that upset about it. I don't care who the First Lady talks to personally.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm glad that you're not that upset about it. But I thought you might be interested in that. That's
now
the same thing.
Yes, now 400-plus files requested by the White House and delivered by the FBI. That I'm upset about. That you should be upset about. I'm beginning to get the feeling that because these were files on Republicans, people are just not that upset about it. Or because their name... your name is not included in those files, you're not that upset about it. I don't know. I'm trying to figure this out. Very interesting. This is one that really should be resonating with the American public. This is one that should have people truly, truly upset. This is one that should have the ACLU climbing the walls, but I haven't heard a word yet from them. First-time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Brian in Las Vegas.
Yes.
I'm calling in regards to your being upset about Filegate.
Yes.
And I think I know why people don't really care much about it, and that's because mostly everyone was worried about everything else. I mean, missing Republican files aren't as big a deal as Hillary Clinton doing what she's doing with Watergate.
Watergate?
Yeah.
You mean Whitewater?
Whitewater, I'm sorry.
People don't care about Whitewater either.
Well, they don't anymore because there's just been too much of a deal made about it. I mean, no one really knows what it is about anymore. I mean, there's so many things going on.
But it's not so hard to understand private information being used potentially for political purpose. That's okay, huh?
Well, I'm not saying it's okay. I think people just don't care about things like that.
I know. I'm beginning to conclude the same thing.
Right. They're more worried about what's going on in their own neighborhood rather than lying Republicans or lying Democrats having their files seen by the...
Maybe that's absolutely correct. Thank you. You may be absolutely right. I mean, it just may be that it's the people have reached saturation or something. I don't know. It is very interesting to observe. Now, in Washington, the pundits, the political shows on TV are absolutely going bananas over it. But the American public has either not engaged yet, or this is very interesting, actually. Very interesting. Dear Art, believe it or not, I have a cat that wakes me up in the morning by pulling wads of hair from my head. Then after that, he jumps up and down on my stomach, runs into the living room, and gets his leash and dangles it over my face. I have never had a cat that was so much like a dog. He loves it when I clip on the leash and take him for a walk. He even heals. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Good morning, Art. George from Tennessee.
Yes, George.
I just want to tell you, I appreciate your humor.
Thank you.
I think you're a very funny man. I don't think many people realize you're being funny on several things you say to them. But no,
it's true. A lot of people think I'm dead serious.
I think you are very funny, and I really appreciate you. You're a lot of company at night. And one other thing, what did you study? You went to college, right?
Yes.
What did you study?
Oh, just nothing that would fascinate you, no astrophysics or anything like that.
Oh, I know. I'm very easily amused at things. I just wondered what was your major or... Because you seem so well-rounded and educated, I just wonder what was your general topic?
I tell you, I don't attribute it to formal education.
Yeah.
If I seem well-rounded to you, it's because I've done a ton of travel. It's because my parents inculcated into me the passion to read. It's because I've had a lot of different jobs, and I've done a lot of different things in my life. And so what you hear from me is not a result of 2 years of college. It's a result of real-life experience.
Hey, well, there may be hope for me yet.
Well, there's hope for everybody, sir.
I agree.
All right?
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I'm not in any way a down on formal education. Because it is important, if you can absorb it and if you want it. However, if I seem able to respond to a number of diverse topics, it is from my life experience. And it is my experience that those, and I will not name names, but I could, those people I know that have gone on to get masters or doctorates and have spent their entire adult life in an academic atmosphere sometimes come out total social cripples. There is something about the refined academic atmosphere that does something to somebody if they spend too much time in it. Does that make sense to you? First time caller line, you're on the air.
Morning, Mr. Bell.
Good morning, Mr. Caller.
Yes. I got to ask you a question. You used to have your flower man from up north.
Who?
Your flower man from up north there.
Flower man? Absolutely fresh flowers.
Yes.
Yes,
I have. How come it's not fresh strawberries? Didn't he also sell strawberries?
For a while he tried strawberries, but what he found out is when you were shipping into warmer climates, there was no reasonable way to keep them cool enough to keep them fresh.
Doggone it, they were good.
I know, they were absolutely spectacular.
Good.
I agree.
And also, I just got back from Bol Bol, Moorea, and Tahiti.
Oh, and Tahiti.
I've been there two or three times.
Yes, sir.
And like Papahiti, Tahiti, where you come into Tahiti, that's an island about 80 miles in circumference.
Yes.
And then about 12 miles off the coast is Moorea.
Yes.
Where Bali High, they call it Bali High.
Yes, I have a number of listeners there. I get postcards all the time.
And then Bol Bol is about 320 miles off the coast of Tahiti.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I hear you talking about it every once in a while.
Oh, I do indeed.
Yeah, thank you, Art.
Thank you, sir. Yes, I have listeners in Moorea. And they send me great postcards of Tahitian girls. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, Art.
Hi.
I got a question for you.
Yes?
It's about the president and what happened. Now, is obstruction of justice by a president, is that an impeachable offense?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, in order to establish executive privilege on documents that are subpoenaed by Congress or the Senate, it has to be a case of national security, am I correct?
That would certainly be my understanding, yes.
Okay. And if the president invoked executive privilege on those 1,000 documents, he had to have read those documents in order to have made that decision of establishing executive privilege, am
that
I correct?
That certainly is one conclusion, yes. Executive privilege was never intended to hide political crime.
Okay. But the thing is, he declared executive privilege on those first 1,000 documents.
Yes,
and he
yes.
didn't give them up until Clinger threatened to take him.
That's right.
To throw the book at him.
Which is what they're threatening to do over the remaining 2,000 documents. And imagine this. If they gave up those 1,000 documents and that was in them, imagine what's in the next 2,000.
But my thing is, I think they have enough on him now because the simple fact is the 1,000 documents that he has given up,
yes,
he did not have the right to throw executive privilege on those. And he knew what was inside of those documents. Therefore, he was in violation of obstruction of justice.
No.
No?
Not technically, no.
But I would like to see the next 2,000 when they do come out. And didn't Newt or one of them say they're going to put him in contempt of Congress if he doesn't turn them over by Thursday? They're going to have
correct.
A vote?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, Art. Thank you very much.
Take care. Yeah, Thursday, I believe, is crunch day for it. And I think that they are not going to give them up. I think the White House is going to hold on to its claim of executive privilege with regard to these next 2,000 documents. But we'll see. It may be at the very last moment they'll turn them over, and it may be that the scandal we've got right now with this Filegate business is but the tip of the iceberg. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah. Am I talking to Art Bell?
Turn your radio off, please.
Okay, the radio's off.
That's good. Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the Clinton and the election, you know.
Yes.
The way I feel, this is Jim from Peoria, Illinois.
Yes, sir.
The way I feel, I mean, the reason Colin Powell won't run, he don't want to run with a loser, you know. And the way I feel, you know, everything that's being said about Clinton and Hillary is people are just the Republican Party is just trying to destroy them so bad that they're destroying themselves.
Well,
because it,
let's slow down for just a moment. Colin Powell had the opportunity to run as president. He outpolled Bob Dole and Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
So to suggest he doesn't want to run with Bob Dole because he doesn't want to run with a loser, I think is very unfair. He could have run as president and won.
Yeah. Well, at the time, though, it's not just right for him right now. When he does run, he's got a real good chance of getting in because I'm for him myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, he's not running, and I don't think he's going to run with Bob Dole either.
Yeah. Well, later on, he probably will. But the thing is, what I'm getting at, people are so sick of this stuff going on in Washington because this stuff's been going on. It goes on with, went on with Bush. Look at Bush, how he double-talked. And they didn't make a big deal out of it like they are Clinton.
Well, I don't recall George Bush ordering up FBI files by the hundreds. Do you?
Well, he might have did it, but nobody knew about it. It was
well,
secret.
Anything's possible, but I think there was a very careful record, according to the Secret Service, of the files called up during the Bush administration. And they numbered about half of the current number of requests made by the Clinton administration, as a matter of fact. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir. Turn your radio off.
Yes, sir. I'm on a cellular phone. I didn't expect you to answer so well. First, just one question. How's your mom?
My mom is fine.
Wonderful. I remember the night that she was on your show, and
I
recorded about one half an hour of it and ran out of tape, and I play it back once in a while. One other thing I would like to talk about is the gentleman's talking about bringing water up and kind of irrigating.
Yes.
What this gentleman was mentioning about the winds touching down and taking the dust and dirt off the face of the earth, I kind of agree with you. I don't think it's going to be a very rational or feasible thing. This is Al in Honolulu, by the way.
Yes.
I listen to you regularly out here, and I overheard one of the gentlemen talking about the television, and you know, it's been about a year, and I've done away with it completely. I'm totally off the...
Do you get the shakes?
I'm on the wagon all like crazy every time I listen to the show.
Right.
But listen, I don't want to tie you up too much. I just wanted to say hi and just find out how Mom was. I heard how the kitty's doing, but I hadn't heard much about Mom. So.
Mom's fine. Thank you very much for the call. If Mother Nature decides, whether it comes out the way Major Dame suggested or not, to turn our farm belt into a desert, my position was that I think going down to a deep aquifer and trying to pump water up to sustain the land as the rain normally would have will be a futile effort. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Radio, pull your file, America.
How you doing, Chuck?
Pretty good, Art. You know, let me tell you something. The Spleefmeister and I are not the same group of folks, Art, and you call me an extremist. And that's where you and I got into a little, I guess, bad feeling, because I don't consider myself an extremist.
Chuck, I didn't feel bad.
Well, I'm not an extremist.
Oh, okay.
How am I an extremist, Art?
I didn't say you were.
I mean, on what particular issue do you and I disagree on?
Most.
What
difference does it make, Chuck? You can have your opinion. I can have mine.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. But
that's very American of you.
Well, no, thank you, Art.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
You can have any opinion you want, Chuck. I've got open lines, and you know I don't screen calls, so I let you call up and say what you want to say. And, you know, what my opinion is of you or you of me matters not.
That's true. Thank you.
You're welcome. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, I'm Eddie from Roswell, New Mexico.
Hello, Eddie.
Hi. I just want to say thank you for all the informative stuff that I get to listen to. get a little nervous there, but I just wanted to mention that and hope everything gets to be okay with the more information you turn out to give to us.
Well, as we get it, Eddie, we'll pass it on to you. Be sure of that. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
I'm from Anchorage.
Anchorage, Alaska. Yes, sir.
Well, in keeping with the quickening, the media is becoming more and more dishonest, wouldn't you say, at a quickening pace?
I think they're not necessarily being dishonest. I think they're just not covering a lot of things. In other words, I think we have censorship by omission.
Well, there's that too, but then it's at a quickening pace, wouldn't you say, because of the quickening?
Yes, I would.
Yeah, well, we're in agreement there.
Okay, well then, we'll have to leave it at that, I'm afraid, on a point of agreement. Not good on a talk show. Listen, from Alaska, you get the honors. Say it.
Good morning, America.
Well, I'll say good night, America.